Should we proceed?
Sure.
Okay, good afternoon. I would like to call to order the September 8th, 2020 regular session of the Historic Preservation Commission meeting. Mr. Lau, may I have the roll call?
Yes. All right, so make sure yourself are unmuted. So we'll start with Chair Munden.
Present.
Vice Chair Beal. Moving on, Commissioner Huff.
I'm here.
Commissioner Wilson.
Here.
And Commissioner Honestad.
Here.
Thank you, Mr. Lau. I'd like to thank everyone for taking the time to join this meeting. This meeting is taking place online to comply with the ongoing social distancing requirement and ensure the community's ability to participate. In order to participate, one must be logged into Zoom directly by computer or telephone. Those who are unfamiliar with the Zoom software, I'd like to provide a quick overview on how to participate. Everyone's microphone, except for the individual that has the floor, will be muted throughout the meeting to ensure as smooth and efficient meeting as possible. Only select staff can turn on your microphone at the appropriate time if you'd like to ask a question or provide comments. I will do my best to let everyone know when it is the appropriate time to raise your hand for a particular agenda item. If you wish to address the commission on any agenda item or during the call to audience, please raise your hand only when I announce it's appropriate to do so. There are two ways to do this. For those participating on any platform other than by phone, find the Select the Participants icon. This will open a dialog box that lists all the participants in the meeting. Scroll down until you find your name and select your name. Once your name is selected, a second box will pop up and you have the option to raise your hand. For those participating via phone, press 9 to raise your hand. Please wait to raise your hand until the appropriate agenda item has been announced and after I announce the opportunity to do so. Otherwise, we will not be able to discern which topic that you wish to address in relation to the agenda. Our aim is to proceed in a timely and efficient manner. Once your hand is raised, Mr. Lau will be alerted to your request to speak. This applies to the audience, staff, and the members of the commission. So please raise your hand if you have a question or comment after I announce the appropriate time to do so. At the appropriate time, I will call on those with their hands raised to provide questions or comments. I will then announce your name and staff will unmute your access so you can speak. Please make sure you are not also muted on your personal device. Please review the meeting agenda so you know the item on which you'd like to speak. Please don't raise your hand until we have made it to that item on the agenda. As with all Town of Oro Valley public meetings, please clearly state your name and whether or not you are an Oro Valley resident. Also, speakers are limited to no more than 3 minutes. A timer will be used, as with in-person meetings, and we ask that you please respect the three-minute limit. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, chair and commissioners are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct town staff to review the matter, ask the matter to be placed on future agenda, or respond to criticism made by the speakers. If you wish to address the commission on a matter not on the agenda, please notify us by clicking the raise your hand icon on your computer or pressing 9 on your phone. Is there anyone that's scheduled to talk to the audience?
Chair Munden, if we're ready to move on to call the audience, you can just let everybody know that we're on that item now. And then just also to clarify for those participating via phone, it's star 9, not just 9. But yeah, if you're ready to move to call the audience.
Star 9. Okay, yes. We are ready to call to audience. At this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the commission. Do we have any blue cards?
Chair Munden, at this time, we do not have anybody with their hand raised. Let's give everybody a few moments. And again, just a reminder, the raise your hand function is if you could click the participant icon and then you are given the option to raise your hand, or if you're on the phone, it's *9. And there was no early submittal of blue cards that came across my desk. So,
okay. So there's no. Okay, we will continue on to the council liaison comments. Council Member Solomon, do you have any items to report?
I just wanted to welcome everyone. I'm very glad to see that everybody's in good health and ready to get to work on a lot of items. I also noticed that Pat Sorrell was on, and I'd like to say hi to her. She's been a great advocate and resource for preservation and archaeology in Oro Valley for a good number of years. So it's great to see that Pat is still staying involved, as well as other members of the historic preservation, historical society. So welcome everyone. Glad to see everybody's here. Hopefully we'll be getting back in person in the near future. And I look forward to the work that you're all going to do. So thank you.
I see that Commissioner Beal has shown up. Do I need to note that or anything?
I am here. Sorry, I had some, I'm not sure if my screen's working right, the video, but I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, great.
We will move on to informational items. Mr. Lau.
All right. Sorry, had to check if I was unmuted. Let's see here. Informational item number one, current information of importance for historical preservation commissioners.
Okay. You all had an attachment that talked about the National Historic Preservation Act of 1966 and touched on a couple points that actually will come up later in the agenda under CLG items, Certified Local Government and Education for the commissioners. So I won't go through all of that, but I do want to point out that at the very end of that, I do place a little reference to Section 106. It requires federal agencies to take into account the effects of its actions on historic properties. So that is something that I will definitely do further education on, because that is often referred to when communities are interested in historic preservation. So even with the Planning Commission and the planning staff, you often hear a reference to Section 106. So at a later date, I will get into some education on that. And I just wanted to point that out. So that's the end of that discussion or that point.
Thank you, Lynn Ann. Mm-hmm. Mr. Lau, can you please read item number two?
Yes, Commissioner or Chair Munden. Informational item number two is report from Oro Valley Historical Society President.
Thank you, Mr. Lau. Paul's here, I see. Is anyone here from the Oro Valley Historical Society to give the report?
So at a later date, I will get into some education on that.
Madam Chair, we are getting some feedback. If you hold on a second.
Thank you, Lynn Ann. Mr. Lau, can you please read item number two?
Yes, Commissioner Chair Munden. Informational item number two is. Let's see, we're getting stuck here in a little bit of a loop. Let's let the technology catch up. Give me 1 second.
To measure the effects of the program by increasing deaths, but rather ensuring that human members are willing to administer the life-saving drug.
This is critically important.
Thank you.
All right. Is everybody still getting a little bit of feedback? Or a little bit. All right. We'll continue. Item number two again here is informational item number two is a report from Oro Valley Historical Society president.
Mayor Loomis, your report.
Okay, I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay, I guess Roxy isn't on the phone. She didn't give me a briefing that I was supposed to report. But the executive committee for the society has been pretty busy trying to work with the town on coming up with a couple of items that are on your agenda associated with the budget and also the push house office agreement and stuff like that. So you can wait until that happens on your agenda, and I'm sure Lynn Ann will give you a full report on those things. We just got the report for the adaptive reuse. I don't know if anybody that wrote that talked to the society or not. I didn't hear any feedback from anybody whether they heard anything about it, but there are a lot of stuff that may impact the society that we're certainly going to be interested in looking at and hearing what y'all have to say about it. Again, we're on a sabbatical for the COVID stuff as well. And basically the executive committee has been the main people that have been meeting during this time. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Loomis. Moving on to the consent agenda, we have one item, Mr. Lau.
Consent agenda item number one is review and approval of the March 2nd, 2020 regular session meeting minutes.
Has everyone reviewed the minutes?
Yes.
Yes.
I move that we approve the March 2nd minutes of 2020.
Second.
Who seconded that?
Dan Beal.
Okay, a move was made by Commissioner Wilson to approve the minutes of September the 2nd and seconded by Commissioner Beal.
Chairman, we're going to do a roll call vote on that just so we get everybody.
Okay.
So, Beal. Chair Munden?
Yes, pass.
Commissioner Huff?
Approve.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Beal?
Approve.
Commissioner Wilson?
Approve.
Commissioner Honestad?
Approve.
Thank you.
Mr. Lau, will you please read the first item on the regular session agenda? Are you ready for that?
I am. Thank you, Chairman. Regular session agenda item number one is discussion and presentation by Consult Econ regarding the adaptive reuse study project from fiscal year 20.
Okay, I am going to introduce you, and it is my pleasure to introduce you to James. As you recall, prior to our long break due to COVID, I announced that the department grant writer, Nancy Ellis, had submitted a request to SHPO for a grant to have an adaptive reuse study done for the buildings at Steampunk Ranch to aid as we move forward to an RFP or RFI where we concentrate our search, or if that is even feasible, a feasible option to consider as a means for rehabilitation or restoration of the buildings. I just want to emphasize that this was just a study of the buildings, not of the entire ranch necessarily, although we did talk about use of the entire ranch, but it primarily was the currently unused buildings that are within the historic core and future uses, potential future uses that would make sense. So I am proud to introduce the lead on this project. He's a planner and a historic preservationist, and his name is James Stevens. And he helped with the early planning of Steam Pump Ranch. So he was on that 2008 original study of the ranch. And so he is well aware of the property's origins and early plans, and was caught up to speed about the way that the ranch is currently used in order to conduct his research and study of the property. So, James?
Great. Thank you, Lynn-Ann. I think we have a presentation. So, Brandon, will you be starting that here?
Yep, I'll get that going for you.
Thank you.
All right, let me fire it up. Ready when you are, sir.
Great. Well, first off, I want to, you know, thank you all, the town, the Parks and Rec staff for their hard work and this study. With the COVID situation, you know, when we got under contract, I believe in, you know, early on in COVID, and it was kind of unclear as to how it would all play out. And ultimately, you know, there were pretty restrictive travel requirements. So we had to kind of work around that. So, you know, thank you all for being so accommodating and that. The Steam Pump Ranch, you could go to the next slide. So here's our agenda. Really quickly, we're going to go over, you know, who we are, where our familiarity with the project that Lynn-Ann alluded to, the project goals, the scope of work, the summary findings, and the next steps in implementation. So next slide, please. We're feasibility planning and management consultants. We've been in business since 1991, and we have over 900 assignments nationally and internationally. We work in communities, big and small, in urban places, rural places, suburban places. We've worked extensively in Arizona. We worked on the master plan for Steam Pump Ranch, as well as other historic resources, Fort Lowell Park in Tucson, the Canoa Ranch in Green Valley, and the Desert Discovery Center in Scottsdale. We've enjoyed a good relationship with Poster Frost, and we're part of that team that did the master plan. And so I am really happy and pleased to see the progress that has been made on Steam Pump Ranch. And, you know, I'm a city planner certified by the American, you know, planning at the American Institute of Certified Planners. And I think this is just an instance of the community coming together to protect a historic resource and really to energize that place through use and reuse of the buildings. But really, it's a park. So I'm really pleased to see the progress. And I know it may seem like a while ago that the master plan was done, but these things take time and it's an important resource. And I think the town is doing a great job. It's, I think, a well-loved community resource. Next slide, please. So really the project goals is to assess the feasibility and kind of a number of facets that we'll get into later, but of, you know, really adaptively reusing the historic buildings and structures. We're looking at the historic core as being really the central kind of resource, the structures there. And then the really the focus on market and operating feasibility and laying out the implementation steps. I think in this kind of thing, you know, when we talk about feasibility, our company, our approach is not if a project is feasible, but how is it feasible? So I think given the work that you all have done, The future uses are not changing based on your current uses. I think we're just building off of the current uses and activity there and using that to leverage the preservation of the buildings and the resource. Next slide, please. So initiating the project, basically, you know, having a meeting, confirming the scope and the timeline with the staff. As I said, we work closely with the staff through the project. The site visit, we had a virtual site walk with Lynn Ann. Thankfully, you know, we had been to the site. Things are different for sure on the ground. And I would love to have gone to the farmer's market or attend a concert to really see how the community is using the place, but certainly we understand the context there, adjacent uses and its location in Tucson. As I said, we've worked extensively in Tucson throughout Arizona, so we understand the lay of the land, if you will. Project planning and management, our process was basically working with the city to start with kind of a broad set of uses and ideas, and then narrow those down, prioritize those in order to, as I said, you know, kind of make things happen and move the project forward. So some of the tasks here, task 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, are the meat of the project. This was the scope that the downtown had developed, and we responded to that. Looking at the historical features, opportunities there, site and building opportunities and constraints, looking out in the market, what does that tell us about what the possibilities are, and then laying out the different opportunities that might be, and then the economic feasibility assessment of the recommended approach to the adaptive reuse. So next slide, please. So we're reporting out now. We've gone through several rounds of report edits with the staff, who thoroughly reviewed the report and excellent comments to move the report forward. And so now we're presenting this to the Historic Preservation Commission here today. The report, the feasibility study, are things that you can use to move the project forward and really let people know about the opportunities at Steampunk Ranch. I think it's a hidden gem maybe within the community. Next slide, please. So the summary findings, really the opportunity is to retain the historic features. I think with all the uses that we've considered as a part of the study, really they all offer opportunities to retain the historic features. The exterior environment, you know, clearly needs to be preserved, renovated. Some of the interior features, you know, some of the walls may need to move in order to accommodate certain uses. That's an architectural question. We're really economic consultants and not architects, so we can't assess that. But keeping the physical structures is really important and possible. And then, you know, the modernization, making it comfortable for people, for users, may require some changes. I think, you know, the historic features are important because of it creates a sense of place. It defines the ranch. I think there's also what's the historical features, you know, in my opinion, really are meaningless unless they're interpreted. So I think overall, we think that there needs to be some sort of interpretive strategy for the entire site so that integrates what the partners are doing on the site. In terms of community education, and as well as just the passive users of the site, to have some sort of idea how it goes. And there can be multiple layers of that kind of interpretation, but it's certainly an important component of highlighting the historic features, not just retaining them. Next slide, please. So So really, the you know, they're old buildings. They're not modern buildings. So when we think of retail or office or commercial uses, I mean, certainly public uses are given. It's a community park. There needs to be some changes. You know, there needs to be a subsidy in order to make the project feasible and any business to locate there. Market rate rents, maybe that's possible, but getting an investor to invest in the rehab, it is likely more cost effective to build a new building that is modern and suits the needs of that commercial activity. However, you know, really the big strategy here is to build off of the current users and the uses and the current activities, the farmers market, the community events and recreation, the heritage ranch, to really enhance the overall activity, but also I think what's important to understand is that the buildings are not necessarily the destination. The destination is the whole, and that the building use can help to support the existing activity on the site and the future activity on the site. So that's really the big idea on that one. Next slide, please. There's in the market considerations, there's a large market here of people. I think the closer in town residents are going to be more familiar with the site, use the site for daily recreation, passive recreation, access to the trail, walking their dog, whatever folks do there. And then when we go further out, capturing, you can't quite read it, but this is a drive time map. The red is 15 minutes, 0 to 15 minute drive time. The green is a 30 minute drive time, and the blue is a 45 minute drive time. So pulling from the 30 minute drive time, the 45 up to 45 minutes, I think it people will travel for good events, for quality music and that kind of thing. I think heritage tourists, while a small segment perhaps of the audience, are an important segment because they bring outside dollars into the community. And they're oftentimes out, not only from outside of the town, but outside of Tucson as well in the region. So there's a great set of cultural attractions and heritage attractions within that zone. And so certainly there's activity that can be leveraged throughout the region to get on the map, if you will, of heritage tourists. I think also the trailhead, the runners, that access is really great, can be improved. Next slide, please. These are just some of the demographic characteristics. I won't go into the nitty gritty, but I think, you know, it's important to note that this is a fast growing area relative to the U.S. The U.S. is not on there, but Arizona and Tucson is a growth market. The 61% family households and there's an affluent population close by. So that bodes well for supportive cultural and heritage attractions as well as recreation. Next slide. So I think I'm not sure to what extent the commissioners and the audience in general, I guess, but the commissioners are familiar with the parks and recreational planning that's going on in the community. I think what's really interesting is that 54% of the survey respondents in the that responded to the needs assessment survey have used steam pump ranch and paved trails in the last 6 months. And so, people in the community are going there. They're going there a lot. So I think what that means from a historic preservation standpoint is really, you know, protecting the resource. How can we both kind of generate activity as well as protecting the resource? So I think that's an important consideration. So really, you know, there's a lot of high priority programs that can locate at Steampunk Ranch. I won't go into the summary. These were all summary points from the needs assessment. So next slide, please. I think too, you know, as I mentioned, you know, tourists are drawn to the unique events, you know, visiting friends and relatives. Since the, you know, I don't know about you all, but, you know, when I have visitors, friends, family come into town, I take them to the place that I think is the best place in my community, the most evocative or representative of my community and its values. And I think, you know, given the popularity of Steampunk Ranch, you know, your best advocates for tourists are those folks that, you know, come visit the residents. And what outsider, you know, wouldn't love a day at Steampunk Ranch, the farmer's market, an event, music event, or recreational trail? Lots of opportunities. Again, it's balancing and coordinating and orchestrating all of that activity. So I think it's also important that there's adjacent uses, the Children's Museum, retail and food services that are nearby, that the connections can really be built more, you know, that there are already connections, but it's being more formalized about it to do that. So next slide, please. We also looked at the, you know, what are the market rate rents for retail, $17 to $18 per square foot. That's an annual basis. Office rents range $19 to $26 per square foot, so a little bit higher. The biggest space is really the Proctor Lieber House, kind of the most desirable. And that's, you know, I think in terms of its size, that to really be able to do something kind of sufficient scale. And so if we're leasing the space for commercial uses, either retail, restaurant, office, you know, if we assume there's some inefficiency in terms of gross building area to leasable area, but, you know, that asking rents, you know, would generate about $63,000 a year, $67,000 a year, if that were to be, you know, just at a market rent. Next slide, please. So, you know, really we went through all of the uses. We kind of put them through, assessed kind of the different criteria for the various opportunities. And when we say opportunities, we're talking about land uses, types of land uses. So, you know, in the buildings. So the compatibility of the existing uses in the nearby areas, I think we talked about that a little bit. The suitability of proposed uses for the building site. You know, we can't put in a conference center there, but maybe we can have a meeting room or two. The market support for the project. I think part of the strategy, if we're looking for a business to locate in the building, to be a partner for the site, I think, you know, we can test that support in the next steps. So we'll talk about that. Historic preservation opportunities, as I alluded to, they're pretty good. Operational funding, the town through its parks and rec department is really the big operator here and is moving to the site. And certainly that will help to create additional activity. The capital funding, community benefits and impacts. Next slide, please. So, as I said, the site use and activities will drive the reuse of the buildings. I think the buildings will be supportive of the park use, the recreational use, the community events that are going on there. I think that there's possibility to increase activity as well as revenue generation. We're talking about market and vending for retail. There's pop-up opportunities that could happen in the buildings, but also could happen on the site. We're talking about potential food trucks, having a trail, having an ice cream cart even There's regulations that need to govern that, and where that occurs will need to be figured out. But it's certainly an opportunity to contribute both revenue as well as an additional activity on the site and this amenity for site users. Certainly the Heritage Ranch and interpretive programs are important to the site's identity, and interpretation certainly can come forward through improvements to the site, to the buildings. So external event rentals, there seems to be a good opportunity, not just for kind of traditional parks and rec renting of pavilions for meals and reunions and family events, but also for potentially if the improvements are desirable for weddings and other kinds of events, receptions, social events, and maybe even corporate events, depending on the size and scale of available spaces. But really the event business can grow if there's a food service component. And we've been talking about maybe a restaurant or cafe. We'll have to test the market for that, see if there are operators interested, but also a catering kitchen or facility might be a different option that the town would have and might make available to the community, but it would also support external rentals and revenue generation. So to mention the office use and small business use, I think it's important to know that a lot of that activity will be occurring in the Proctor Lieber House. The Parks and Recreation Office, the other building spaces, the Push Ranch would remain heritage ranch attraction, interpretation, education, and then the other building uses would help to create amenities for site users. Next slide, please. So I think the site itself is pretty well defined in terms of the areas. These are just general. This is not a site plan by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it gives one sense of how the uses really do fall pretty rationally on the site from our perspective as planners. Next slide, please. The adaptive reuse, so the opportunities, I think, for the site, which would support the building reuse, it's really looking at the motorized and non-motorized plan. If we want to have a commercial use on the site, the parking needs to be convenient and according to the needs of the business. The parking plan, I think there's if the strategy is to do events, to do bigger events, community-wide events, then there certainly needs to be a plan for those kinds of peak activities. If we can accommodate that parking on site, maybe do shared parking with adjacent users. If schedules work, I think it's something that needs to be coordinated and thought through thoroughly. Interpretive and visitor experience plan, I alluded to. That can be a whole variety of things. It can be very expensive to implement some of those ideas, but it can also be very inexpensive and cost effective. The wayfinding signage, again, that can be linked to interpretive, but I think people need to be able to understand the place, both locals as well as people that have never been there before. I think that helps with the user experience and better customer satisfaction if they know how to get from point A to point B effectively and efficiently and aren't really confused about things. But it is also, I think, what the beauty of the place is that there is some degree of discovery that occurs because it is unique to the community. And so having people explore the site in not necessarily totally led down the yellow brick road or the Freedom Trail, but enabling them to explore the site in a way that helps them to understand the place better and also enjoy that sense of discovery. Next slide, please. So our recommendations here for the program, the ranch house to remain the heritage interpretive space, the pump house is already preserved and protected, part of the heritage experience. Chicken coops, also part of the heritage experience. Opportunities for heritage agricultural displays. Next slide, please. The bunkhouses, heritage themes, restrooms, and a multi-purpose program and event support spaces. These are recreational programs, but also rentals from the community. Rentable pavilion, again, more space that can be used in that manner. These are small spaces, so they're going to be smaller meetings, but I think that that'll be a nice to have meetings there. We can create studio space for dance or yoga or something like that. There's good opportunities there. And the parks and recreation offices are already being located there. So that should help to manage that space as well as kind of keep eyes on the ground for the park. So next slide, please. The Proctor Lieber House is really kind of a series of options. the idea of a food service on site, a restaurant, cafe, coffee shop, something that's a destination in its own right will contribute to the overall activity of the site. We're not creating a strip center, there's not a possibility of creating a critical mass of retail on the site, but having something that's very complementary, a destination restaurant, may be able to stand alone. Without that interest from potential operators, maybe there could be caterers also locating on the site, which would be kind of a different facility, but it would support events on the site, providing food service. Again, I mentioned that it could be a town-led initiative as well to create a kitchen facility that would be for support events used by caterers, but also potentially rentable by the community if there's interest there. And then office space for a small business or a nonprofit such as the Chamber Arts Organization. Next slide, please. So we assessed some of the feasibility, some of the implications of the recommended adaptive reuse opportunity, really looking at the facility rentals, renting the various facilities will generate income. We're already doing that. Fees, income associated with the community events, pop-up. It's not big dollars, but it will generate that kind of economic activity. Certainly, if the office or retail restaurant space is rented, that'll generate income, and then there might be catering income, depending on that use and operation. The private support of the site is the nonprofit partners that are really programming partners that help to activate the site, create uses there. The businesses could potentially sponsor all of the events. It's certainly a worthwhile project in the community. And so there is an importance of a friends group and really using that as a conduit in concert with the town's resources and access to public funds. A friends group can access funds, a wider array of funds for the site. And that would be generating both private contributions, but potentially grant and foundational support. So next slide, please. Town support, as I said, there's Parks and Recreation Department budget, the capital funds that have been making improvements to date. So this is a project that's most assuredly in process. And so I think we're not necessarily correcting the course. We're just showing additional ways that this could be activated and the next steps for that. So, staffing needs with the town are really dependent upon the level of activity. I keep saying, increase activity, Some of that is, you know, you have to spend money in order to increase that activity. So some of the thing, you know, may not happen if staff is not added to really drive the use of the site for recreational programs or community events, and even selling the space as facility rentals. You know, it's not just about a matter of advertising it on the town's website. It's about a matter of kind of selling the space. And that depends on what type of space is ultimately there. But certainly there are partners, both nonprofit and private businesses, that would also do that as well. So the operating costs, whether it would be increased town costs, you know, depending on the level of use and activity and the wear and tear, that could vary. Certainly the private partners, any cost might be passed along to private partners, facility renters on the site. You'll want to recoup as much of the cost as possible for any kind of big use of the site. Next slide, please. So really the capital funding I mentioned, both, I guess before it was really an operating funds, but the Friends Group is both a partner for capital raising, fundraising, as well as operating support on an ongoing basis. The private partner could have a grant that might do an educational program on the site. That's a great way to leverage the private sector for through a public-private partners. Next slide, please. So implementation next steps, the Parks and Recreation offices are on site there. I think as the Parks and Recreation Department and the staff get more experience with the site being on site and expanding the calendar of programs and events and rentals, you're going to really get a lot of experience of how the users use the site and what the potential needs are for improvements. Looking at how to use the alternatives, food service alternatives, you know, as well as office alternatives. There's huge cost differentials. And, you know, we certainly would encourage you to explore the costs and the configurations that would be required for that. As we discussed, I think we need to understand better the level of interest from the private sector in locating on the site. That can be done through a request for proposals, a request for information. It can be done informally, just through reaching out to, and there's probably a defined universe of potential food service operators, catering operators that would look at that, as well as for office users and small business users. Next slide, please. And then really all of the exterior plans need to be looked at and realized. The community events and rental facilities, how does the indoor space and the outdoor space kind of work in conjunction to deliver a good product? And then really, I think there needs to be additional research to identify funding sources to make the project happen. The plan, it's always good to have a plan, to have a study, to really help to leverage those funding sources and demonstrate the need of the project and the potential of the project. And really, again, I can't kind of stress enough, if the public-private partnership, Friends Group, it's hard work to get that going, but it can be really impactful in terms of how the project gets implemented and is operated in the long run. Next slide, please. I believe that's it, actually. So if you have any questions, comments, Brendan, I don't know if we're taking them now, perhaps. But I don't know, Brendan, you let us know what the protocol is.
Yeah, absolutely. Commissioners are welcome to discuss. It's a discussion item as well.
Okay.
We have no discussion. Moving on, Mr. Lau.
I think I have a question. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
James, Mike Wilson, are there contingency plans for expansion should any of these concepts that are chosen and worked upon explode, which I think they might over the next 5-10 years?
Contingency plans.
Might not be the right question. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I guess, you know, we're trying to, I guess some of it is kind of like, what if, you know?
Right.
You know, we kind of like, you know, well, if then, you know, if you can't find a private sector partner, right, then you really do, the town needs to take a leadership position. I mean, the town's already taking a leadership position, right? The town is the owner, the operator of the site. But, you know, inviting the private sector in, I think we need to determine that. And then there needs to be kind of a plan B or plan C for that. So I think it's always the contingency plan is always the public sector. It's always the municipality. And I've even seen states kick down things to the municipality because the kind of the government of last resort. So I think that, I mean, I don't know if that's answering your question, but that's kind of how I understood the idea of a contingency plan.
Well, James, thank you for a wonderful presentation. Very thorough. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Chair Munden, well. It does look like Commissioner Honestad wishes to speak on the item.
Mr. Honestad?
Yes, thank you. I would just like to request again that such materials like this, what apparently was the PowerPoint presentation, be made available for me so that I can have them while the meeting is actually in progress.
Yes, the PowerPoint presentation and the report are available to you. I'm not sure if they were distributed for this, but certainly the town has the information and can share that.
Yes, but I would like it for concurrent use during the presentation rather than getting it a day or so after the presentation.
Commissioner Honestad, I'll definitely work with you on that. It was an attachment with the agenda that went out to everybody, but we'll make sure that you get a copy and for future meetings that you have access to that in advance.
I would like to correct what you said. The attachment for the agenda was a report, not a PowerPoint.
You're right. The PowerPoint, this is the first time anyone has seen it.
Okay.
Oh, you can't. Commissioner has said the report was 40 pages long, and there was a PDF, and I don't know that you can get this, but somehow we'll get you that package every month.
Yeah, I got the 40-page report, but I did not get anything that approximated the PowerPoint.
No, none of us saw the PowerPoint. We all witnessed it firsthand just then. So,
when the PowerPoint is presented, the day that it's presented is when we a lot of times get it. So we may not have it in advance, but what we'll try to do, since you don't necessarily have the screen to see it at the time, we will send that to you when we get it, because Brandon just got it in time to load it for the meeting today.
Okay. I suggest that this is more of an ADA issue than commission business. I'll take it offline with Brandon.
Okay.
Absolutely. Commissioner Honestad said we'll make sure that that you get that material and we'll work through the next meeting. So.
Thank you, Mr. Lau. On to the next item, please. Scheduling a study session.
Yes. Regular session agenda item number 2 is discussion regarding HPC future funding request prioritization plan.
Mrs. Dellerman Silverthorn.
Yes. So this item, I will mention some things briefly. And then if you can see your agenda, you'll notice that our next one is to schedule a study session to work deeper on this topic. So I just don't want anyone to be alarmed that this is a discussion only currently, and that you may want to have more involvement in it. There, that opportunity will come up in the number three and the study session that will follow. So this is very, this is likely a very deep and involved conversation, as there are several items, as are several other items on the agenda as well today. You were all sent a link to the Consult Econ report for adaptive reuse, and then we will send you links to some other reports that you may want to study prior to the study session that will help you have the information you need to help further a deep discussion in prioritizing capital funding for Steam Pump Ranch or other HPC projects for that matter. A few thoughts prior to number three, which is to set the date. It is important for the HPC to set an annual prioritization plan for projects needing to be addressed. So that needs to come up regardless. That is on the code for HPC, one of those things you're supposed to review on an annual basis. This conversation will be specific to discussing a funding prioritization plan. I'm going to mention just a few brief ideas, and then I hope that will spur some thoughts on your own, because it is a discussion. You can raise your hand and talk. We just can't have action. We could use this funding for Steam Pump Ranch or local registry or any of the other things that are within our scope of work, which as I go on to educating you on CLGs, you may find that there's something else that you want to add to it. But as it applies to our code is really where we want to focus. We want to identify funding opportunities, town capital funding, grant funding, partnerships that strategically align with our priorities. We want to consider recommendations from the adaptive reuse study. So that's the other report that I'll send you. That was the one we just got. I'm sorry. We want to also consider from the Steam Pump Ranch Master Plan and Master Plan Update, and from the 2014 conditions assessment report, or something I've regularly referred to as the stabilization report. It's not conditional, it's a condition assessment. So it reviewed the condition of all the buildings in 2014. So those are a few of my thoughts to keep in mind as you guys move into a study session on that topic. Does anybody else have anything they would like to discuss on the topic prior to a study session?
Schedule the study session.
Okay. I think I'm going to bring up the phone for this one. So just a couple things that I want to let you know is that I am going to be out of town from September 17th through the 22nd. I have a grandson's birthday I haven't ever missed that lives out of town. So I am unavailable from the evening of the 16th through the evening of the 22nd, but I'm available beginning the 23rd, and I do get back early enough on the 22nd, I can prepare. So my personal opinion is that we should plan something for the 23rd through the 25th that week. And the town staff are kind of hoping that if commissioners are available as early as 3 p.m., that we can get that study session going prior to 5 so that it doesn't reach way into the evening. As far as my recommendations go, I recommend 3 p.m. on the 23rd, but that's open for you all to discuss what works for your schedules.
Excuse me, Mr. Lau, you need to read number three because that's where we're at.
Oh, sorry. I moved ahead.
Number three.
Well, and real quickly, before we formally move over to number three with the study session, the discussion about that in regarding the study session as we move forward, that is really designed to be a little bit less formal from the standpoint we're going to have much more discussion, a little bit of a way to ask questions and go back and forth and really get some more information, not only from what we'll be providing as the town, but also hear from you all as members of the commission as to your desires or what your views are. So it's really, it's called a study session, but it's definitely going to be a bit of a brainstorming discussion where we identify what we feel would be the best way to move forward together. And from that meeting, we would then schedule to bring this back as an agenda item, at which point in time we identify some more specifics as to what the prioritization plan looks like. So just so that everybody's aware as to what this upcoming meeting would look like, that's kind of the idea behind it. It's much more informal. We're just having more of a conversation and trying to understand where everybody's coming from and where we want to go.
Thank you, Mr. Jankowski. Before I move on, Mr. Seidels, we do have a member of the public that raised their hand, I believe, is for a previous agenda item. So I don't know what you suggest as far as addressing that.
Well, since we haven't called number three yet, you can go ahead to it. They can go ahead and talk. I assume it's on the item number two.
I guess
we're going to have to find... actually gotten off. Okay.
Yeah. So, Chair Munden, it does look like a member of the public named Devon has raised their hand. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute them. And I will flip over to a 3-minute timer because they are held by that time. So here we go.
What did you say his name was, Mr. DeLau?
Yeah, it looks like Devon is what they have.
So, Mr. Yeah, Devon.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Devon.
Hi, Devon. Miss Sloan.
I live here in Oro Valley, have for about 20 years. Part of my three, goodness. Part of my 3 minutes, I really just have to commend Lynn Ann on how she is sitting. She looks like an angel with that seal behind her. Anyway, I just had a question about all the reuse of the buildings and stuff. I know that the whole ranch is considered National Register of Historic Place. Well, the buildings definitely have to be modernized, but will they look the same on the outside? I'm just curious.
Chair Munden, is it all right if I address that?
Sure. Yes, please, about how the difference in the restored looks compared to the original.
Yeah, so we are on the National Registry of Historic Places for our historic core, which the new map that the Historical Society just put up there, our interpretive map, the directional map, which is beautiful, by the way, that does show you the lines for the historic core. Everything within the historic core and anything else, if at a later date becomes part of the National Registry, all is required to retain the same integrity on its outside. There can be elements of the inside that are updated. So to your point, the outsides will remain the same. What is changed will be very little and must maintain its integrity. In other words, it may get new windows, but they have to have be through the companies that create the historic window look, and they have to represent what was there. So that's the way historic preservation works. And these buildings will be rehabilitated, which means that they'll be upgraded for new use, retaining their integrity and their external look.
Cool. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for your compliment, by the way.
Devon, real quick, can you state your last name?
Sloan. Her name is Devon Sloan. Sloane.
Perfect.
Thank you.
We may be ready for item three.
Okay. Mr. Lau, we are on item three. Okay, so are we trying, Mrs. Dellerman Silverthorne, we should schedule a study session.
I'll go ahead and read it. Let's make Tobin happy here. So regular session agenda item number three is schedule a study session to work on objectives for item number two. And then before Ms. Dellerman Silverthorne takes over, we did have a correction. Lynanne, I believe you stated it was September 23rd. It's the September 22nd. So just an update.
Well, I know, but I have sent an updated note to Christy and Matt, and we're now talking about the 23rd because I'll be out of town. Okay. So I recommend 3 p.m. on the 23rd due to my schedule, but we're here to discuss what works best as a whole. So if anybody has another recommendation, go ahead and make it.
I'm good.
This is Dan Huff. I unfortunately have a court hearing. And for those who don't know, I'm an attorney. It's not a personal court hearing, but I'm in court from 2 to 5 that afternoon.
Do you have another suggested date and time?
Commissioner Huff, how about the 25th?
As long as it is, my only commitment that afternoon is 3:30 to 4:30, so anytime around that.
So can I recommend 4 p.m. on that same date then? Does that work for you, Commissioner Huff?
3:30 to 4:30 is when I'm booked.
Yeah.
Oh, 3:30 to 4:30 is when you're booked. Okay.
It sounds like you can't make it till close to 5. Most days.
Okay. How about the 24th? How are people with the 24th?
Sounds good for Mike Wilson.
Fine for Commissioner Munden.
That was good for Commissioner Beal.
Worked for me, Steve Honeyhead.
So, Commissioner Huff?
Yeah, I can make that work.
So the 24th, at what time, Lynanne?
3 p.m. And okay. I think you have to ask for a vote. I don't know.
Oh,
yes.
I will call for a vote on to schedule a study session on September the 24th at 3 p.m. Brandon, will you call the roll?
Yes. Chair Munden.
Fine with me.
Vice Chair.
Can we have a second, please?
Oh, yes. This is a good point.
My second.
Oh, yeah.
Commissioner Huff for a second. All right. Let's start the roll call vote over, if you don't mind. Chair Munden?
It's fine with me.
Vice Chair Beal?
Yes.
Commissioner Huff?
Yes.
Commissioner Wilson?
Yes.
Commissioner Honestad?
Yes.
All right. Approved.
Okay. We will have our study session on the 24th of September at 3 p.m. via Zoom, correct, Brandon?
Yes, I will get that set up.
And you will send our numbers. Okay, moving on, Mr. Lau, to the next item, please.
Yeah, regular agenda item number 4 is presentation on education/training in preservation for a certified local government.
So we'll turn that over to Mrs. Dellerman Silverthorne.
Okay. This past summer, I registered and attended a virtual conference put on by the National Alliance for Preservation Commissions. I didn't know there was such a thing that existed. I am really glad I found it. And as such, I will be studying how they train and everything that I can to help educate this group in the role, their role as a CLG. So that's what I'll be bringing you today. So each month I will pull from the forum, from the this commission, this group, their resources, and will help train all of you in your roles of HPC. This month, I will begin by giving you a short overview of where historic preservation and historic preservation commissions began. Then each month, I will add to it through either a PowerPoint presentation, knowledgeable guests, or with verbal or visual presentations of information gathered through personal research. Today's presentation is just verbal, and I gathered it through personal research from the National Alliance for Preservation Commission's website, as well as other commission training documents from other towns and cities that train, and then the National Historic Preservation Act. So, pull up my document here. In 1966, a special committee on historic preservation for the U.S. Conference of Mayors explored the issue of heritage conservation in America. Their report titled With Heritage So Rich, sparked adoption of the National Historic Preservation Act that year. In its introduction, author Sidney Hyman set forth fundamental reasons for preservation that remain valid today, and here's just a tiny part of his comments. We want to know the beautiful or useful things that were built and the originality that was shown. Why do we preserve historic resources? Preservation honors our diverse heritage. Preservation supports sound community planning and development. Preservation maintains community character and supports livability. Preservation supports sustainability in our communities. What does historic preservation mean? Preservation means keeping historic properties and places in active use while accommodating appropriate involvement to sustain their viability and character. It also means keeping historic resources for the benefit of future generations. So I just want to point out that the presentation we had earlier really took those comments into action when we're thinking about steampunk ranch. So I thought that was cool. That is, while maintaining properties in active use is the immediate objective, this is in part a means of assuring that these resources will be available for others to enjoy in the future. Preservation is about managing change, not freezing properties in time. It also is not simply about maintaining a historic appearance. It is also about authenticity, which involves, where possible, keeping the original materials and craftsmanship of historic properties intact. What is a historic property? In preservation terms, a property may be a prehistoric or historic district, site, building, or structure, or object that has been determined to have historic significance by applying criteria that are adopted by the governing body. Generally, a historic property is one that is associated with an activity or person of importance in the community's history, or that represents a noteworthy designer, or a type of building construction that is important to the area's history. What are our goals for preservation? National Historic Preservation Act of 1966, as amended through 1992, states that it is an act to establish a program for preservation of additional historic properties through the nation and other purposes approved October 15, 1966. The act may be cited as the National Historic Act, and then Congress finds and declares that the spirit and direction of the nation are founded upon and reflected in its historic heritage. The historical and cultural foundations of the nation should be preserved as a living part of our community life and development in order to give a sense of orientation to the American people.
Historic properties significant to the nation's heritage are being lost or substantially altered, often inadvertently, with increased frequency. That was from 1966, and we want today to still make sure that in our community where we haven't started preserving neighborhoods, that that we don't fall into that same hole. The preservation of this irreplaceable heritage is in the public interest and will be maintained and enriched for future generations. In 1966, historic preservation programs and activities were inadequate to ensure future generations have a genuine opportunity to appreciate and enjoy the rich heritage of our nation. So it was fixed with that act. The increased knowledge of our historic resources, the establishment of better means of identifying and administering them, and the encouragement of their preservation will improve the planning and execution of projects and will assist economic growth and development. And it is necessary for the federal government to accelerate its historic preservation program and activities and encouragement to agencies and individuals undertaking preservation by private means and to assist state and local governments and national trusts for historic preservation in the United States to expand and accelerate their historic preservation programs and activities. Early local preservation ordinances in the United States. While private associations were forming to preserve individual properties of historic value, no local government had passed a regulation requiring preservation of local landmarks and indeed districts until South Carolina enacted its first ordinance in 1931. These local designations came about from a long-term growing concern that we were losing historic properties that are of importance to our national fabric. Federal preservation activity. Over the years, many federal actions have continued to preserve, have contributed to the preservation movement while others did not. Beginning in 1935 with the National Historic Sites Act, which established the National Historic Landmarks Program and authorized the Secretary of the Interior to administer it, the preservation movement gained ground. The program recognized nationally significant buildings, sites, and objects that represent the prehistory and history of the United States, and it encouraged their long-range preservation. Then in 1966, Congress passed the National Historic Preservation Act, which created the National Registry of Historic Places. It also established, and this is important for us in our conversation when we talk about funding, it established grant programs for restoration projects and survey activity and required a review of federally funded, licensed, and permitted projects for impacts on historic properties. The act also provided that each state, tribe, and territory should establish a historic preservation officer to help administer the law in their individual jurisdictions, and the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation to serve as a presidential and congressional advisor on historic preservation matters. Then in 1976, the bicentennial spurred new interest in history and historic properties. This period saw a surge in local governments establishing preservation commissions. So in 1980, the Certified Local Government Program, which is the whole reason I went through all of this, is because I want you to know what you are and where you came from. The Certified Local Government Program was created and is a preservation partner between local, state, and national governments focused on promoting historic preservation at the grassroots level. So your responsibilities are primarily preservation, okay? Established as an amendment to the National Historic Preservation Act, the program is jointly administered by the National Park Service and SHPO in each state, which is the State Historic Preservation Office, with each local community working through a certification process to become recognized as a CLG, or Certified Local Government. Certified Local Governments then became an active partner in the Federal Historic Preservation Program and the opportunities it provides. The role of commission. How do local commissions fit into the historic preservation system? Clearly, local governments were pivotal in creating the preservation movement, and thus commissioners play a crucial role in promoting good stewardship and the active use of historic properties. They do so in these ways. Stewardship. Commissions promote proper use and care of historic property. They do so by reviewing proposed improvements, discouraging demolition, and encouraging use of incentives to facilitate preservation. Identification. Commissioners sponsor surveys that catalog properties and serve as a basis for identifying resources with historic significance, which we did. We do have a historic survey. Evaluation. Commissions also work to evaluate the potential significance of properties identified in surveys using adopted procedures and criteria. Nominations. Commissions may then work to officially designate properties that meet eligibility requirements. They do so by nominating those properties to SHPO for formal listing. We're trying to do the precursor to that, which is have the local registry so that we have all of our paperwork and ducks in a row and we've learned how to make it work. And then we'll move on to these next steps when it comes to the neighborhood or local designation. Which is one of our roles beyond steampunk. Education. Commissions promote awareness and appreciation of historic resources and encourage appropriate treatment of them through education programs. So just prior to COVID hitting, I was requested by one of the historic neighborhoods in the town to talk to their HOA. That would be something that we could together work on to create an education program that would be very appropriate for the commission. Planning. Commissions may engage in long-range planning activities in their communities to assure that historic preservation is an integral part of public policy, and they also sponsor planning for treatment strategies of individual historic properties. Like in our case, that would be Steampunk Ranch. So that's my presentation and education for this time. I will try to have it done in PowerPoint form so it's something that you can keep. But if there's any parts of that that you all would like to have me send to you, recopy and present or have attached to next month's agenda, I would be happy to. But I did want to review it to that depth prior to our study session, because to me, many of those things spoke to what your job as a CLG is and may inspire you and the way you discuss the preservation projects. That's my presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Dellerman Silverthorne. Mr. Seidel, is there any action we need to take on that? No?
No.
Okay.
It's just presentation.
Moving on, Mr. Lau, next item.
Regular agenda item number 5 is discussion in local register of historic buildings project plan timeline.
Okay, so that's me then.
Mrs. Dellerman Silverthorne.
Okay, so our code is 6-10. Many of you have copies of that from the past. You will get it to further our discussions, but I do want to kind of review ever so slightly some of the things that that are required in that so that you'll know what our goals need to be moving forward. We have discussed this in the past, so this is a review, but I really hope to have this all move forward this year, meaning FY21. Historic landmark designation process. The commission may designate a historic landmark. Application submittal and review requirements. An application for a landmark designation shall be submitted by an owner of the subject property or agent and involves the following steps. Pre-application or consultation with town staff, which may be the director, maybe Matt and I, and it may involve planning. And then the application submittal requirements per code. If all the required materials have been submitted, the application shall be considered complete and shall be accepted by the director. And following that acceptance, the director shall conduct a review and prepare a report, which shall be submitted to the commission and made available to the applicant, media, and general public at least 7 days. So I wanted to really kind of go over these timelines. At least 7 days prior to the commission's public hearing on the landmark application. So we're even going to follow these for local, not just the national. Upon acceptance of a completed application, no building or demolition permits affecting the proposed landmark shall be issued by the town until the process as described herein has been completed and the commission has made its decision. So I'm just paraphrasing this. I'm not going to get into everything. So when it says herein, that's 6-10-7. Notice of commission hearing. So upon receipt of a completed application for a landmark designation, the chair shall place it on the agenda for public hearing within 30 days. So after we get that application, we need to make sure that within 30 days we've placed it on. So it depends on how close to a meeting it's submitted to us. It might have to go on the next one. But as long as it's on an agenda within 30 days, public notice of this hearing shall be given as prescribed herein. The town shall give notice of dates, time, and place of the public hearing for consideration of a proposed landmark, including general explanation of the matter to be considered and a general description of the affected area at least 15 days before the hearing in the following manner. Publication at least once in a newspaper of general circulation in the town, posting on affected property so that the words public hearing, so you guys have seen these signs around town, I know. We would also have to have one in this yard and the date and time of the hearing, and they have to be visible from a distance of 100 feet. It shall be the responsibility of the applicant to maintain the posting once erected. Notification by first class mail shall be sent to each real property owner within 300 feet. So that would be the town's responsibility. In addition to notice by means set forth above, the town may give notice of the hearing in a specific case in such other manner as it deems necessary and appropriate. Persons with specific issues or concerns regarding the proposed landmark are encouraged to contact the Planning and Zoning and Parks and Recreation Department. So we will get in deeper, but I wanted you to know what steps were necessary for us to get to that point where we were doing more than just reviewing an application. We've talked about individuals who were interested in having their home designated, but for them to be officially designated, all of these things have to happen as well as the hearing. So just so you know, we are way in infancy when it comes to all that. We do have some people who are interested, but it's now been a couple of years since I had an intern that helped me with the outreach. And so that process would need to start again with those individuals to make sure that they were still interested, and then we would move forward. That's the end of that presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Delavan Silverthorne. We can have a discussion on this. Has anyone had anything to say? Moving on, Mr. Lau.
On to department reports. Item number one is update on CIP funds for fiscal year 2021 at Steam Pump Ranch, specifically the garage and the push house.
Mr. Jankowski.
Evening. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Munden, members of the commission. It has been a while, as everybody knows, since we all got together and were able to meet as a commission. And since then, the town did approve a budget. As a part of this upcoming fiscal year 21 budget, the Steam Pump Ranch Garage Project was approved for $550,000. This is to go towards design as well as construction of the garage building. It also has got some funding in it to finish off the fire suppression and security system at the push house. I know that that is an item that's a little bit further down the agenda, so I am going to kind of hold off a little bit more details until we get to that specific item. But that is essentially where we sit with the budget itself and the funds available for it. So we did receive what we asked for in the amount of $550,000, and we do anticipate being able to complete both of those projects during this fiscal year, which would be up until June 30th of 2021.
Mrs. Stellerman Silverthorne, is there something for you to say? Oh, you're muted.
No, Matt will be talking on the first few subjects, the first three.
Okay.
So I'd be happy to answer any questions if there are any. If not, we can certainly move on.
Okay, moving on, Mr. Lau. Does anyone have any questions? I'm sorry.
It isn't something that you can ask questions on. It's just a report.
Okay. Sorry. Oh, moving on, Mr. Lau. Next item.
Yes. Department report number two is progress to date on the push house fire suppression system.
Mr. Jankowski, again, to you.
Thank you, Chair Munden, members of the commission. So to date, we have received a quote for this type of work. I know that this is something that was in a previous budget with a very high dollar figure, and we were hopeful that we could combine this into some additional projects and utilize some town staff as a way to try to get the cost down on this. So we have been working with a fire suppression system company that does installation of these types of systems, and they are willing to do the work for us, of course, as long as we're willing to pay them. But it is at a significantly less price than what it was we were looking at previously. We've also been very lucky to have such a great water utility department, as they are going to assist us with the main line installation and actually stubbing out all the way over to the push house building. So this, this is something that is going to be a substantial savings compared to if we were actually going to have to go out and have a private contractor do this amount of work. So we are moving along with this now that we have this quote on what it is for the fire suppression system. We are continuing to work with the water utility. They are doing some design plans right now. They're not quite at the 30% completion level just yet. But they are working their way through it. The idea between both the garage project and the fire suppression system would be completing design work and construction documents with the plan of beginning construction shortly after the first of the year.
Thank you. Do we have any discussion questions on this?
So all five of these items, Chair Munden, are no discussion. They're just
okay. All right, I'm first timer. Okay, Mr. Lau, move on to the next item, please.
Yes, Chair Munden. Item number three under department reports is update on agreement with Historical Society for use of office in push house.
Mr. Jankowski, I believe that's to you again.
Chair Munden, members of the commission. We continue to work with the Oro Valley Historical Society with regards to the lease agreement for use of the office building in the push house. We received their most recent comments from the updated and revised lease document on September 2nd. We are in possession of those and are working our way through them. We anticipate having further discussions with them, but as of right now, they're being reviewed, and we will continue to work with them and move forward so that we can complete this document.
Thank you, Mr. Jankowski.
My pleasure.
We moving on then to the next item, Mr. Lau?
Yes, Chair Munden. Item number 4 is update on the activities at Steam Pump Ranch.
This goes to Mrs. Dellerman Silverthorne.
Thank you, Chair Munden and Commissioners. So I don't know how many of you had the opportunity to get out to Steam Pump Ranch over the summer, but Joel and his team really worked hard on the buildings, removed areas of stucco where it was crumbling, and we have some of our staff that have become local Adobe experts after working with, our Adobe specialist that came in and did our workshops. And so we now have some professionals on our own staff. And so they repaired any areas on the external walls of the Proctor Lieber house where stucco needed to be repaired. They did a lot of paint repair. And then there were areas that wood was rotting a little bit and that could be fixed through the means that oftentimes construction workers use so that they don't have to cut it off or replace it. And a little bit of that was done in areas where we knew that was the right thing to do at this time when we weren't doing a full restoration project. So the Proctor Lieber house looks beautiful. They redid both colors, both the turquoise and the tan that are on the walls, and so it looks very, very good. Also, Joel and his team went in and they did vine and weed removal between the fence. Now, I don't know how many of you have seen the fence guard that goes around the garden, but it's a double fence trying to keep out the critters that we know upsets Joyce so much as she's trying to, grow those beautiful plants in there. And it looks really bad because it's very, very difficult to get in between. And so Joel and his team did immensely difficult work to get the weeds out of there and really improve the look of the garden area. And then the south bunkhouse was just recently completed with that same stucco repair. And now the wood, a lot of the wood was recently done on that particular, on the bunkhouses. And so so they didn't have to do any of that wood work, but the paint and the stucco repair has all been done and it looks really good. That's just the bunkhouse that's closest to the push house. The other one will be addressed after our upcoming activities that we have going on out there. So in addition to what the recreation and culture staff did, which is the things I just named off, the parks crew, with the help of some of our part-time staff that work at the community center and other places, laid the grass in the backyard of the Proctor Lieber house, which is a completion of a project that was from the prior year. Many of the other aspects of that project were done, but the grass hadn't been laid yet. And so that was done with that additional help of that young staff needing some hours during COVID. And then they also, again, it was primarily the park staff, but a little bit of that young help also planted the orchard, and the orchard was in the master plan, both the original master plan, the master plan update, and the planting plan. All three had called that area between the backyard and where the swimming pool is, and up closer towards the fence line there at Oracle, the orchard. And so we have some great little plants and they're still doing very well. So if you get a chance, take a look at that. It's really, really quite cool. And just so you know, all of those plans were approved by prior commissions, each of those plans I just named off. And then the water department just completed their survey work for the fire suppression system. I'm sorry, that was one Matt already addressed. And then we have the parking lot leased from until the current lease is until 10/31, so October 31st, to El Toro Flix. So this area is outside of the historic core, is not a part of the historic core. It is the dirt parking lot that is in the southern part of Steampunk Ranch. And we do have a contract with them. We hope that they extend at least a little bit because they are willing to partner with us on so that we're able to do a few activities. And so here's what we have planned. We have two drive-in concerts planned for October 2nd and November 6th. So I hope they stay through a little beyond the 31st of October. So what that will be is the same way people drive up to watch the movie, they'll drive up to the concert. The band will be below that big screen and then also projected just like in real concerts. So, it will be a really fun activity for families that have been cooped up and haven't had much option except for movies. This gives them something else. And so we're kind of excited that that's coming to fruition with their help. And then we will be conducting a haunted car ride instead of our regular Halloween activities. And that will use that same area, although the movie screen will not be going during any of that. It will be all the other Fridays in October after the 2nd. So from the 9th through the 30th. And it does the same types of stories that we did in prior haunted hay rides where it's a haunted ride through Arizona history. So all of the haunts, of course, however true people profess them to be online or in books, they are all from historic documents from Arizona. So that will be a lot of fun for people who want to hear that local lore, which is what it is. So we're excited to be able to provide that in a very COVID safe manner. And so that keeps people visiting Steampunk Ranch and those visitation numbers high, which has always been something I've wanted to have happen. And then we're hoping that in January, we'll see some kind of a solution to our current situation and our second Saturdays can return and our Historical Society push house tours and our farmers market can have food again. We're just hoping all of those regular programming that really helps that heartbeat of Oro Valley beat again, which I see our heartbeat being Steampunk Ranch. So that's the update on the activities at Steampunk Ranch in the end of my presentation.
Thank you, Mrs. Delerman Silverthorne. Next item, Brandon.
Yes, item number 5 is update on discussion with planning pertaining to the Gist home owned by the Alexander in Oro Valley Country Club Estates.
I know that there were a few of us who listened in and to the report on the Alexander home. And I know that she did come and talk to the commission a few times. And while things didn't go their way during that particular meeting, the planning and zoning staff are requesting a zoning code amendment. That doesn't mean it's a done deal yet, but they have just allowing the planning and zoning staff to authorize or grant common sense zoning variances. So there are other municipalities in Arizona, including Pima County, that have such amendments in their zoning code. So I've got my fingers crossed and we'll hope that that they are successful in that request. But they did feel for the Alexanders, and this is their response to it, even though the Alexanders didn't get the answer that they wanted in their appeal. So that's the update and the end of my report.
Thank you, Mrs. Delerman Silverthorne. Mr. Lau, the next item, please, is future agenda items.
Yep, nothing, Chair Munden, to read or report on my end, so.
Okay, do we have any, does anyone, commissioners, have any items that they would like to add to the future agenda? Okay. Seeing no further business, I would like to make a motion to adjourn. Do I call for a motion or do I make that motion?
Call for a motion.
Call for a motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
Looks like Commissioner Honestad raised his hand.
Mr. Honestad, second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any oppositions? No? Okay. Thank you very much. See you on the 24th. Good night.
See everybody. Great job, Gail. Thank you. Wonderful job. Lynn Ann, you too.